Welcome to Middle School Matters podcast number 674, Can't Catfish with a Calculator. We've got some jokes for your classroom. We're going to talk about some catfishing and calculators. We're going to talk a little bit about AI this week. So without further ado, here's the wonderful, the magnanimous, the Mr. Troy Patterson.
All right, welcome back to the show. I am Troy Patterson, and with me is the world's greatest co-show host, Mr. Sean McGurr. Hey, Sean.
Well, hello there. How are you?
I am well. I am back from the Cash's Ledges experience.
I think well was a very good response for that.
Yeah. There's a lot of water involved.
Yeah. It's good to see you.
It was interesting to, you can't actually see Cash's Ledges because it's underwater. It's essentially an underwater mountain range. But what you can see is kind of the effects of that, the mammals and some of the sea life and the birds, lots of birds. And kind of surprising because we were pretty far out there on the ocean. Like, can't see land at all out there on the ocean. And there were birds. There were always birds.
Huh.
So, and they were big on telling us the water temperature. That's an important thing. So yep. They told us the water temperature. And I thought of Dave Bidlowski.
Oh.
Because we got to one point and there was a couple of whales. So we were doing the whale watching thing. And they explained that... because there was several people had cameras on the boat as well, as you can probably imagine. Mm-hmm. And they explained that you can take pictures of the whale tail, and there is a site where you can upload them, and they will identify the whale based on the markings on the underside of the tail. So apparently the underside of the tail of a whale is similar to fingerprints. And so they said, and they even used these words: "You can be part of the citizen science program movement." I don't remember. I know they use citizen science project. Upload your pictures, and it helps them. Like, keep track of where the whales are and which whales and who's where and what and who's still around and all that good stuff. So I thought Dave would enjoy that Citizen Science Project was being kind of specifically touted. And apparently the whale we saw was not in their database.
Oh, did you get a badge? Did you get a badge? Did you get a badge?
I did not get a badge. There was an official photographer on board as well. And I haven't had a chance to go and look at the pictures that he took. I've been busy looking at the pictures that I took. And I got some nice pictures. I was pretty pleased. It may be the old, even a blind squirrel gets a nut every once in a while, but I did get some nice pictures. So... got a couple that I'm happy with. So
nice.
So it was a 12-hour boat ride.
12-hour cruise. Yeah. 12-hour. Okay.
So the day started very, very, very early because it's like 70 miles from, it's like 70, 100 miles from here to Bar Harbor.
Oh.
Or if you prefer, to Bahaba. And but it takes 2.5 hours to get there because there's no direct line from here to there. It's like da 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 da, you know. And we were supposed to be on the boat at like 6:30 because we were leaving at 7:30.
Okay.
And then we got back at 7:30, and then we had to drive back. So, long day. Pretty tired. But yeah, it was very, very, it was interesting. It was interesting to learn about the Cassius Ledges, the mountain underwater. It was interesting to learn about a couple of the lighthouses that we saw on the way and the birds. We saw lots and lots of birds, and it was kind of funny. It's like, because they tell you like where to look based on a clock, right? So at 2 o'clock.
Right.
So it's, you know, everybody can understand that and process that quickly. And it's, let's say at 2 o'clock, there's a bird over there, you know, there's some birds over there, and we're waiting for the identification. So they had several, I don't know, certified, licensed bird spottery people.
Birders. Yeah, birders.
Well, they were beyond that, though. These are like people that have gone to college for this stuff and that. And they would identify what kind of bird it was. Because sometimes there's birds that, like, there's subspecies, which aren't, and there's one subspecies that has now been elevated to its own species. And ooh. So, you know, there's all that going on.
Would these be full-fledged ornithologists?
Could be, yes.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank all you right. for pulling out your big words.
Next, we try a TLA. That's coming up in the show.
It's coming Stay up tuned. In the show. So yeah. But it was fun. I did get a little bit of seasickness at one point, but I got over that quickly and
good.
And enjoyed the trip. The weather was nice. We were a little worried because it was during the time of like Hurricane Aaron going through.
Oh, that's right.
So, but generally it was pretty doggone nice. So it was, and it was, like I said, it was interesting to go out, and my wife had wanted to go out on a boat where you can't see land, you know, like out on the ocean. And this definitely fit that need, fit that request. And it was very interesting being out there where you can't see any land. And the number of birds, I can't tell you, I'm surprised at the number of birds that were out there, and, saw some fish as well. Oh yeah, it was fun. But, anyway, but that's why there was no show last week, because we were busy doing that, and Sean did other stuff. So,
yeah,
I did go see a movie as well, and I hate to tell you this, but the movie was pirated.
Arr, no, you say.
Yeah, so I gave it 3.14159 stars.
I got you. Yeah. Sounds delicious.
Did you know that sometimes as dogs age, they may not get around as well as they used to?
You don't say.
I do. And it might be because of arthritis.
Oh, sure.
Just a thought.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need to, like, make your voice louder, right?
That's true. Yes. And I teach seventh grade, so yes.
I teach seventh grade. And it's interesting that you get to choose between a microphone or a megaphone?
Oh. Go large or go home?
Oh, I heard a pun about a potato.
You did?
I did. I'm not going to tell you it, but it was very appealing.
Ah, good, good. Mm-hmm. The eyes can see that one, yeah.
Yeah. You know, there is this theory that if you hold up a shell, you can hear the sea.
Yes, I've heard that theory.
Yeah, a friend tried it, though, and they got was 6 years for armed robbery.
I got you.
There was, the things that people miss are those little smiles that occasionally like, Sean wasn't quite ready for that one, or he was ready for it, but it still touches that little smut that makes you smile.
This is a good one.
Speaking of little spots that make you smile, we have some visual jokes for you, including being called by a middle name. So head over to middleschoolmatters.com. And you can check out those as well. I did really, really enjoy the first visual joke there quite a bit, as well as the last one. The last one I chuckled at when I saw that. And you may experience a little ups and downs when you're surfing the web, and some things may work better than others as you visit middleschoolmatters.com. But you know who's really good at dealing with the ups and downs?
Somebody on a boat watching whales.
Yes. Yeah, there was a lot of up and down on that, but it was related, but not quite what Dave Bidlowski is going to talk about this week. Because this week, Dave Bidlowski has, he's going to talk about roller coasters.
Ups and downs with wheels.
Yeah.
Oh.
So here, without further ado, is the wonderful Mr. Dave Bidlowski and the Middle School Science Minute.
Hi, this is Dave Bidlowski of K12Science.net, and this is your K-12 Science Podcast. I was recently reading the July-August 2025 issue of The Science Teacher, a publication of the National Science Teaching Association. And I read the section, Career of the Month, written by Luba Vangelova, and she wrote an article entitled, Roller Coaster Engineer Greg Lewis. And she said that, roller coaster engineers design and maintain amusement park rides. The largest parks have staff engineers. The rest contract out such work to companies that specialize in this field. Greg Lewis works for Skyline Attractions based in Orlando, Florida. He focuses on the mechanical engineering aspects to ensure that rides operate as envisioned, while also being safe, comfortable, and easy to maintain. Roller coaster design is a synthesis of engineering, art, and design. People typically enter this field after working in different industries, bringing a variety of skills and perspectives to their work. And when she interviewed Greg Lewis, he said, on a normal week when he's not traveling, his job involves a lot of design work. He uses CAD programs such as Autodesk Inventor to model elements like roller coaster trains, lift machinery, and transfer tables, the track portions that slide sideways to allow trains to be taken on and off the track. There's also a lot of math involved, stress calculations, fatigue analysis, sizing motors for lift machinery, and figuring out how to arrange cars. Some days, his work may go on for several projects, and other days, he may spend the entire time grinding through a 200-page calculation. Emergent issues come up often, and he has to react. You can make all the models you want, he said, but in the real world, stuff doesn't always behave, so he gets phone calls with questions such as, this doesn't fit, how do we modify it? He has to come up with solutions that meet requirements, keep things safe, and are well documented, and he has to do it quickly so machines and people can keep on working. He travels to visit vendors and machine shops to check on progress and to amusement parks during installations. Modeling is fun, but helping to put everything together and seeing it become real is even better. Being out in the field also shows you what works and what doesn't, which improves future designs. His favorite part of the work is seeing people enjoy the rides he's designed. To inject fun into the world is satisfying. His least favorite part is dealing with emergent issues. Having to fix something as fast as possible can require late nights or very early mornings. He said as a kid, Roller coasters scared him to death. He hated them and wouldn't ride them. But he was fascinated by how they worked. Big machines flipping people upside down above the midway. He'd watch them, trying to figure them out, and also read whatever books he could find about them at the library. Curiosity got to him eventually. He started riding them and ended up liking it. He decided to become an engineer and by middle school was known as the Roller Coaster Kid. In his advice for students, he said, "Do well in your schoolwork, but also start reaching out to people. A lot of opportunities come down to who you know, or rather, who knows you. So when there's eventually a job opening at their company, your name will come to mind." He did it on hard mode. Connections could have been made easier. If there's a local amusement park, work there in the summer. If you work in operations, you'll meet people and get another perspective on how these products are used. Another way to meet industry people is to interview professionals for your school paper or go to events such as the IAAPA Industry Association Trade Show or ASTM Standards Meetings once you get into high school and college. And this has been your K-12 Science Podcast.
Gonna go round in circles. Let's see here. You guys, your school started. Our school starts next week.
We did. We started.
With a caveat.
Yeah, what's the caveat?
Our fifth grade and our ninth graders both came into school this week. So they had one day of school so that the fifth graders and the ninth graders could get a chance to be in there without the big kids.
Now, do they get to leave school a day early at the end of the year?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's a good idea, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You could also do a you could do a shift day also then, have everybody move up a grade at the end of the year, experience the next grade up. That would make that totally doable.
Yeah.
That's a cool idea.
Mm-hmm. So, and I have to say that there's a fifth grader walking, carrying one of those, the Stanley cups.
Yes.
You know, the Stanley's thermos mug, not, you know, the water bottle-y thing, kind of.
Swear to God,
that thing was half the size of her. It's like, whoa. So, yeah. So you guys were back. You had your first week of school. Did you have a full week?
We did. No, because it's Memorial Day weekend here in the States. And so we give them Friday because they don't come anyway on Friday because their parents are all going up north to cabins and rivers. And they're going to spend the weekend enjoying the last weekend of summer. But they're also going to spend time closing them up or getting them ready to turn into hunting cabins come November. So a lot of our families, I take that back, 40% of our families are doing that. And the other 60% are not coming because the other 40% are coming. So either way, you know, we do the Friday off and then we'll do Labor Day on Monday. And then we're back on Tuesday. And so it's a 4-day week on that week.
Right.
And away we go. And we're going to start off the week with an early release time so that teachers can have a PD meeting, 1-hour PD meeting on Tuesday. And we're doing early releases on Tuesdays this year for give teachers an opportunity to do their PD, have department meetings, have some conversations. We're supposed to be having conversations that are to improve our instruction. We're not entirely sure what that means because it's not, they didn't ask the teachers what they wanted to talk about to improve their instruction. The admin is saying, you're going to have these discussions that we want you to have. So I don't know that how that's going to work. So we'll see. But you know what? It's time we didn't get before and we had to have our conversations on our own.
Right.
And this is going to allow us not to have one of our department meetings, because normally we're pulled out of the classroom 3 days a year to have department meetings and have intra-grade level department discussion. So you get to talk with the other teacher who teaches your subject about stuff you're teaching. But with this, we should be able to not have one of those days. So we get to spend it in the classroom and still get a chance to have an ongoing conversation about what we're teaching and how we're teaching it. And I don't know, whatever they're going to decide that we're going to do. But this week is going to be a instructional coach district provided professional development, DPPD. Mm-hmm. It's not a TLA. That would be a quad LA or QLA.
That's right? True.
Okay. So still have not hit the TLA requirement that I set for the beginning of the show, but yes. I did do a bonus QLA. So, whatever that gets me.
A TLA plus one.
Oh, there, you know what? That sounds so much more educational too. A TLA plus one. I like it. Where was I? Oh, so we'll see how that goes. I'm looking forward to it. We had the whole week to discover all kinds of the bugs, scheduling stuff. We discovered that most of the scheduling was copy-paste from last year, right into this year. Mm-hmm. We had the opportunity on Thursday. My team had a chance to meet as a team on our prep. And we got to have our special ed teacher on our team actually join us. And so we were able to have these wonderful discussions about the special ed kids that are coming into our classrooms, and there's a bumper crop of them this year. But some of them don't need as much support as others do. So it was great to find out which ones those are before we start doing things like, you know, your regular vocab assessments and some other things. So you're able to give kids challenge right off the bat, as opposed to figuring it out halfway through. Then they complain that suddenly things are getting a little more difficult because you change the parameters because they don't need the support that you were giving them in the first place. So it was nice to have that conversation. Then we've already identified some kids that we want to keep an eye on because it could be a problem. And we've already identified, I think, two kids. I know one in my class, I think there's one in another class, that is going to have an attendance problem. So we're going to start an attendance tracker on that kid right away. And right. We're all going to keep track as to when they come in and what classes they're missing and, you know, how to connect with the behavior interventionists. We have two now downstairs, and start saying, this is an attendance problem and I'm going to give it to you because I'm going to go teach. And we'll give that a try and see how that works. So we're looking forward to teaming this year. So we started. Yeah, we started this year. That's a long way to say we started this year. And I think we get out a week before you do at the end of the year.
Yeah. I think you guys get out a little bit. We get out depending on how many snow days we take. We get out basically the middle of June, like the 16th or the 14th or something like that.
Yeah, we'll get around get out around the 8th or 9th of June for us.
Yeah, so, you know.
Yay.
That's just the way it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you ready tech-wise coming back to the classroom?
We are. We're one-to-one. So we have all of the computers in place except for kindergarten, but I am mm-hmm. not worried about kindergarten because I don't think kindergartners should be worrying about technology devices the first few days of schools.
Correct.
The first few months of school, maybe. So we'll get those set and ready to go, but everything else we've got in line. Lots of the teachers have completed the annual training course, so which is one of the things that I do. And it's always fun talking to new teachers because they're like, I ask them, you know, so did you, you know, how did the course go? And they're like, it was really easy. In my old district, we had to sit there for 2 hours while somebody went through all of this stuff. And It's like, yeah, that's one reason that I did it is because you can do it on your own time. You don't have to, you know, and then it's just, it's faster and easier. It really is a compliance kind of thing. It's just a reminder. I mean, teachers know, like, don't touch blood, you know, and whether you have somebody come in there and lecture at them for an hour about it, or whether they spend 10 minutes going through the, do this, this is where the protective gear is kind of thing. I'm not convinced is going to be a whole lot different, you know? So we have that. And then we're working on, you know, things change constantly in technology. That's one of those things that kind of comes up, is you can put in the best laid plans that you want, but if there's a site that makes a major change, you gotta respond to that. So we've been working through that and getting that set up and all of that good stuff. But the rubber hits the road when the kids come in and away they go. So, but we should be ready. We should be in good shape. You guys had a little bit of a SIS tech kerfluffle as well.
We've had quite a few of those. Yes. We've had basic things like, not being able to log into things. And whenever there's so many moving pieces, like between the ISD and your district and other places, you know, one change starts off a whole chain reaction of issues, right? And then mm-hmm. lots of people have to come in, and when they make changes to fix the changes, that creates other changes on other things. So I'm glad they're getting rid of the penny, because that will help solve some of the change problems, at least in one area, right?
There you go.
Yeah. So
that was a stretch.
Yeah. See, you right out of left field brought that in right just for you. I like pennies, and I don't want to see the penny go, but that's my personal preference. Yeah. We've actually seen a lot of technology failure. Like all of a sudden the docs that teachers have been connecting their laptops to, the docs have just been saying, yeah, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't. And so they don't. And then we've had issues with we're switching teachers over to fancy Chromebooks, and but they forgot to consider the number of monitors that a Chromebook graphics card will support, which is another reason to go and just get a Mac, Mini, and just leave it on your desk and let it be. Not even a new one. Just go get a refurb, and then just that solves the whole Chrome problem. And I had a couple of teachers come and talk to me about that. So that may be something that's coming up in the future. But the kids are back. This is the group that has some issues with technology. So we're watching that. We've already run into the whole 6-7 meme that's going around. Like anytime you play Luke.
What is the 6-7 meme going around?
I am so glad you asked. The 6-7 meme that's going around. Are you familiar with LaMelo Ball?
He was thought by Dad to be way better of a player than he was.
Absolutely
by the NBA.
Right. Absolutely right. Yeah. So LaMelo Ball was in the I forget which, you know, he was either USC or it was a California school. Mm-hmm. Now LaMelo Ball and you actually have like a weird connection.
Maybe, we do.
Do you remember when we taught in China?
I do. It was 10 years ago now.
It was. It feels like yesterday, but yeah, it was 10 years. Do you remember going to Wafajing, the fancy, super schnazzy, high expensive mall that has another one right next to it that's like a night market?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So a week after you and I were at Wafajing, mm-hmm. LaMelo Ball and his basketball team, college basketball team, were at the same mall. You know what the difference is, though, between you and I and he?
He's had a lot more money and a lot more people paying attention to him than we did.
And we didn't steal a pair of basketball shoes.
That's true. We didn't steal anything.
No, we didn't. We didn't steal anything. We stole the hearts and friendships of Chinese teachers everywhere. And by steal, I mean they were so friendly and they just gave it to us.
They were wonderful, yeah.
Yeah, great people. He got to see the inside of a Chinese jail, which is something we did not do.
Correct.
Thankfully. And then the basketball team was kicked out of the country. And when he got home, the basketball team kicked him off the team. So dad took him to Lithuania. So that next year when I was in Lithuania with Dr. Boyd, I didn't know this, but he was playing up in the northern part of Lithuania. So there you go. He's been chasing me all over the world. But LaMelo Ball is 6'7".
Okay.
And he's been using this, and a rapper has a song referencing 6'7". And so people are just throwing 6'7" in everywhere as a reference to LaMelo Ball and some other things, and to reference to that song. And they're doing musical memes. They're using as the music background for these memes that they're doing. So everything is 6'7", 6'7". Now there is, and we'll talk about this later in the show, there is a response now to 6'7". 6'7" really doesn't mean much of anything. There's a response to this is 4'1", not 4'11", 4'1". We'll talk about that later in the show. How's that sound?
Okay.
Yeah.
There was even a football coach that used the 6'7", and the reporters were surprised. The cranky old football coach in a press conference used 6'7", mm-hmm. and they asked him how he knew about it, and he said his kids told him.
Yeah. So. Well, we came up in the team meeting because the kids are using this in their blue kit tags, right? You know, Muhammad 6'7". So-and-so 6'7". And so one of the first things we talked about at our team meeting on Thursday was, what's the 6'7" thing going around? And the special ed teacher actually looked it up, and she said it's a reference to a rap song. And I said, how follow the lyrics? She goes, I don't know, but I'll find out. I haven't looked up the lyrics yet. I've got to look it up. But by and large, a lot of the websites I've looked at, and she's going to talk to her teenage son here this weekend, I've looked at is it's not really a reference so much to the lyrics in the song as it is they just like the meme and the music. And they're saying it's pretty harmless, but I want to look at the lyrics first before I decide. But yeah, so there you go. You have a connection to LaMelo Ball.
Okay.
Drop that one on your middle school kids.
It's actually, I think you have more of a connection than I do, though, with the whole Lithuania thing. But
yeah, sure.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll drop it on your kids for you. How does that sound?
there you go.
I'll take that responsibility. Where are we at here? Kids back. Oh. You want to talk about that? Let's talk about that.
The kids are back, yeah.
The kids are back, yeah. So our math coach is trying to develop some interdisciplinary exit tickets for the kids because now they're back.
Yeah, we had a chat about this morning. This was something that Sean stared at me because he asked me a question and I had to process. So I could see Sean just kind of looking at me like, and then. I had to kind of formulate my thoughts and words, but this was interesting, and then I thought this was a good discussion that we had this morning as well.
Well, has your thought cooked in your head? Because I can present it if it still needs another minute to bake.
Oh, go ahead and present it. Anything different than what we talked about, but we can talk.
Okay.
About
my ideas are pretty half baked, and so I want to make sure yours are fully baked so that. We get the good stuff will be after I talk about it. So our math coach came up to me and I went up to him last week. Yeah, last week. And I said, I talked about this thing that I was talking about with a math teacher at ISTE this summer. And he mentioned to me, and it really made me stop and think, that the math assignments we give kids, we often say, you know, the kids say, I've got so many problems to do. And he says, are they really? He says, because if we're just having them practice math equations, those are math puzzles. But if we're having them do it in a real world context, well, that's a math problem. And I told him this just before our department meeting last week. And he stopped and he goes, oh, that's a really good question. He goes, let me think about that. So he went and he talked to one of his engineering friends. And his engineering friend looked at him and said, that's a really good question. Let me think about that. So that he's been thinking about this now for a while. and I don't know that it's connected to this, but that's what happened before this. And then the other day he comes to me and says, hey, do you guys ever talk about Babylon? And I thought, well, that is ancient Civ. So yes, we do. And he says, you ever talk about Babylonian number systems? I said, well, not so much. We leave that mostly to the math teachers, and I don't know if they cover it at all. He smiled. He looked at me and goes, okay, let me think about this. And then he came back with this idea. He says there was a teacher who showed him an exit ticket that had three blocks. It had, and he called it mild, medium, and spicy. Mm-hmm. And so it had three different levels, right? And a kid could answer any one of the three questions that they wanted, but the question had, and he called it an exit ticket, but I think you and I came up with a better name for it here. We'll talk about that at the end. He had an exit. He said, this is an exit ticket. And the kid could choose mild, where it's just like lowest level knowledge, medium, which is directly tied to what went on in the classroom that day. I shouldn't say directly because it's interdisciplinary. So it's directly with a tangent. And then the spicy, which is something that requires more complex thinking and should be a reach for kids to do. And so there are going to be kids that want a challenge and they'll take it. There are kids that are like, yeah, I don't want a challenge. I'll just do this. Then there are kids who are just like, don't give me any challenge. I just want to answer the question or a question. And they answer the first one. And the first one doesn't have conceptual knowledge of necessarily what you're taught that day. Just, is there any prior knowledge? Is it looking for prior knowledge? And the middle one, the medium and the spicy, both deal with conceptual knowledge taught that day, where the spicy is conceptual with an extra challenge to it. And he ran that by me and said, what do you think about this? And I kind of like the idea. I said, it's worth a try. So he did it about Babylonian numbers, because I think that's kind of like his track, something he knows about. And I said, Troy, what do you think about this? And Troy said.
And I said, it doesn't seem like an exit ticket for me. I am struggling with how this performs as an exit ticket. And I was kind of stuck into the exit ticket part for a minute there. And we had to have some discussion. And I said, this is an interesting voice and choice option, but if they want to call it a homework assignment, if they want to call it an assessment, if they want to whatever, that's awesome. I just don't think it's an exit ticket. And the reason is that it comes back to what I was taught was an exit ticket. And for me and my experience, an exit ticket is something that the kids do on the way out of class that kind of tells you whether the kids got it or didn't get it. And if they didn't get it, the next day, it allows you the next day to go back and go, all right, there's some misunderstandings. So, you know, we're going to clear this up and we're going to reteach it. But the idea of an exit ticket, as I was taught it, is that kind of immediate formative feedback, kind of low stakes, but you get an idea of whether the class as a whole got it or not. And the exit ticket, the assignment, I'm going to switch the name. The assignment that you shared with me didn't, I was looking at it as a teacher, and it didn't function as like an exit ticket for me. It would certainly tell me something, but you've got these three sections. They're different. They're different in terms of what it is it's relaying about what the kids got out, what they can do. And I don't feel as though it would tell me whether the kids got the objective of that day or not. Because they could pick the, well, I forgot what the non-spicy one was. There was, you know.
There was mild, medium, and spicy.
Mild, medium, and spicy. So the mild one was would be like, okay, so how many of the kids answered the mild one? And if they did, would it tell me that they got the objective for the day? And I wasn't sure that it would. It would tell me something, but I'm not sure it would tell me whether the full objective for the day was kind of meant, was met or not. The medium one, again, and it's tough not knowing what the objective was, right? Because the objective is,
right,
should be an important part of this, is an important part of the exit ticket process. So not knowing what the objective is makes it kind of tough. But the medium one and the mild one were different enough that it didn't seem to me that if I had, like, let's just say that all of the kids answered either the mild or the medium one, I wasn't sure that that would give me the information to tell me that, yes, the class got it, we're ready to move on or not. And then the spicy one was, you know, kind of data point in there, which, again, seemed to me to be slightly different. I want to stress that it's not that I think it was a bad assessment. I don't really know because I don't know what the objective was. And the idea of kids being able to pick is awesome. I like that as well. I'm just not sure it works as what I consider an exit ticket. That was my issue, was the terminology of an exit ticket.
Okay, I am going to now ask a question to throw you into tailspin. Ready?
Got it.
What if you were to take and put this in Moodle as a confidence or certainty-based marking question?
Oh, I like that. And I think using the certainty-based is awesome. And it tells you how good the kids feel about answering that question. But that doesn't change the issue of, does that question tell me whether, does that question assess what I want them, what I wanted them to come out of that day with? Those questions for me, those three questions are so, so different that it wouldn't help me line up what an exit ticket is. I think it'd be a good assignment. It just wouldn't be an exit ticket.
Did we read off what exactly the questions were?
No.
No, we should probably do that because we have an audience going, this is like a TLA. Yeah, so let me read off the questions really quick. A mild question, or the mild question, was list two ancient civilization rulers and tell me when or where you learned about them. And like I said, I think he's going for like an interdisciplinary thing. Medium, which is two red chili peppers. We learned that pencils didn't exist in ancient civilizations. Write down the name of an ancient numeral system and then write the number five. So there's a blank for numeral system. And then how to write five is underneath. All right. And I think in conversations with him, he's thinking about writing it in cuneiform, which we might show, but I don't think I actually, I don't, when I do cuneiform, I do Ugaritic, right? Because it's phonetic. Babylonian is completely pictograph. So you'd have to know thousands and thousands and thousands of pictures, whereas Ugaritic, you just have to know 24 letters. And spicy, which is 3 red hot chili peppers. The Braille sequence below is 3 consecutive numbers. Guess what 3 numbers are located below? And then it gives you a hint. One is, and it gives the shape, 3 dots. Or 1 dot is 1, 3 dots is 0, which is not what I would have guessed. But so then it's got the things in there, right? And it shows the shape. So you have a hint to help you deal with it. And that's the prototype that he was playing with. This is where I think certainty-based marking might be better on this. And I agree, this is like an assessment question.
I love the certainty-based process. I love that it's built into Moodle, and that's a great thing. But even if you're not doing it in Moodle, asking kids, how sure are you of this and why are you sure? Getting them to reflect on their knowledge and getting them to develop the habit of metacognition is really, really powerful. So, but it, again, for me, a lot of this comes back to the exit ticket moniker, because exit tickets for me have a very specific use. They have a very specific purpose and they have a very specific use. So they definitely could use it as an assessment. Might be a wonderful assessment, but it's the exit ticket part that is different for me. And I could be wrong. I'm willing to be wrong. It's just that's the way I was formed and molded.
Okay. So, yeah. Well, there you go.
All right. We frequently joke about a short show, and
we made that joke this morning.
Yeah, so we're like, we don't have a lot this morning, but anyway, we are going to swing over to the social web and Cybergenetics.
Sure.
Has posted the no phones policy has been in place for a week. And since my students can only use laptops when I explicitly allow them, I have more kids reading than ever before. We're going to set up reading nooks around campus. I thought that was interesting because I know there's a lot of places that are going to a no cell phone policy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of places that are doing the pouches so that kids can't use it, mm-hmm. you know, during the day. And this is, that'd be an interesting side effect. They have more kids reading. So that's interesting. And I thought I'd share that.
I saw an interview this morning on TV where a history teacher was talking about the dramatic change he's seen in his, now this is high school, but a dramatic change he's seen in his academic performance. And granted, he's in Texas. They've been in class for 2 weeks or more. But he's already seen a huge difference in engagement in the classroom because the cell phones are gone.
Mm-hmm.
Wait till they figure out they can create a Google Doc and just, quote unquote, text or chat inside that Google Doc on the computer anyway. So
they do that. They figure that out real fast. And it's funny because I've had teachers say that they want me to block Google Docs because the kids have figured out that they can share and type. And I'm like, don't let them use the computer then. This isn't computer time. You know, because at some point, you know, or walk around and go, hey, knock it off. Nothing Nothing beats presence. Right?
Yep. Being there class-wise is a beautiful thing. Yep. You know what else is a beautiful thing? Helping your new teachers get through their first year. And MiddleWeb at MiddleWeb has a review of a research-based easy read for new teachers. And this is like the second book that they've done this on, called You're a Teacher Now. What's Next? It's an easy, well-organized read sharing a wide range of proven practices for new teachers, says teacher educator Michelle Schwartz with an E. So there's that review. Dr. Norton runs a wonderful website and Reddit. I believe it's a Reddit feed. And you can get full access by subscribing to the feed and paying a small fee. And if you do, you're helping out Dr. Norton and his small research team based in the hills of Asheville, North Carolina. Beautiful, beautiful location. And Dr. Norton, of course, is a retired professor from UNC. AMLE, we're excited to announce a new virtual opportunity for the AML community, the Middle School Leadership Roundtable, hosted by education leaders from AMLE Schools of Distinction. These sessions will serve as a platform for school leaders to engage in meaningful conversations on critical topics of the day. And you can join them at the web link that we've got in our show notes. It's essentially AMLE.org/roundtable, but you can go straight to our website and get the link there. John Soash. Mm-hmm. Type the @ symbol in the # Gemini chat box to connect to Google services like YouTube. Lets you pull in content from other places. A great way to find videos for your next lesson. And you might pull it from the National Park Service.
You could.
Right? Yeah. So you could also, this is a friendly public service announcement from the National Park Service. You could also read aloud the passive-aggressive email you wrote to Carol. This is talking about when you find a bear in the woods. You wrote to Carol after she scheduled a meeting at 4:30 on Friday. The bear might come closer or stand on its hind legs to better understand Carol's audacity. However, a standing bear is usually curious, not threatening. So there you go.
The National Park Service is a good place to, they're doing some fun stuff. So
yes. They are. The folks providing a service. And AMLE, at AMLE, and this is, they reposted a post or maybe an original post by Jack Brookmeyer. And it says you get 3 free events. Because when he says it sometimes in the video, it sounds like you get 3 events. And no, that's not it. You get 3 free events when it's time, or then it's time for solutions. Jack joins us with one final tip to close out our month-long celebration of middle school teaming. Don't forget to grab successful middle school teaming while it's still on sale through Sunday. And we have a link to both the video and where you can get your copy of the successful middle school teaming. Right from AMLE, and if you are a member of AMLE, you also get your member discount. So there you go. Lastly, we'll wrap it up with Susie Dent at Susie_Dent. Word of the day, tick. It looks like theic, but it's tick, I think. I'm just going to go on a limb here. It's a 19th century word defined in the Oxford English Dictionary as one given to immoderate tea drinking, a tea drunkard. Who knew you could get drunk on tea? What are they doing to those leaves?
I was going to say, doesn't it just mean you're going to make lots of visits to the loo?
I was going to say, you should have seen me in South Carolina when I was going to college. Holy cow, it was tea everything.
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
Well, you know, you might want to jazz that up just a little bit.
Jazz it up, jazz up my tea. Now we're going. Oh yeah, you know what? I know just a company for that. We'll see if we can get them a sponsor on the show. Go ahead.
Okay. Jazz it up.
Jazz it up. Yeah, yeah.
The next one is
sure it
jazz
is
jazz forward.
Singer. I was trying to get you to make me laughy. Aha, laughy out loud. Ha ha. What is so? The jazz forward pop songstress Laffy released a new studio audio album called A Matter of Time on August 22nd. So why it's right on trend? Well, Luffy's music, oh, this, by the way, is from Access to Culture Translator. I want to make sure I give them credit. Why it's right on trend? Luffy's music is weird, but vividly imagined. Not a single note wrong kind of way. Singles from her new album include Snow White, a vulnerable acoustic ballad about struggling with self-worth in a world of that emphasizes physical beauty. She criticizes the hypocrisy of the quote-unquote sick world that pretends to value other things, singing, beauty always wins, and I don't have enough of it. I'll never have enough of it. She's Icelandic by birth, but Luffy's music, I shouldn't say but, Luffy's music feels like Bjork with a side of European Billie Eilish. The songs are epically arranged and memorably performed, and Luffy's intentional and deeply personal relationship with her fans has made her a big success with her younger listeners. Her previous album, Bewitched, was the most listened to jazz album to ever hit Spotify. Some of Luffy's music does feature profanity, so be aware of that. You, I believe, are quite the jazz connoisseur. I don't know if you're a Luffy fan or... because I may be saying that wrong.
I did listen to some of her stuff. She's a... I found her to be a valid singer, but what she's singing about is not exactly within my interest, let's say.
I got you. So she's the Taylor Swift of jazz. That may be going too far.
I don't want to upset any Swifties. So, apparently there's a lot of them.
Yes, that was also on the Culture Translator this week. They're referring to them now as TNT. Travis and Taylor.
Yeah.
So that's something else. So if you want more, like what's going on with teen culture, Access to Culture Translator publishes a newsletter every Friday with three current things that are happening with teens. What's pop right now, popular. So you're more than welcome to find them, sign up for their newsletter, and get it in your email box. They also have a wonderful dictionary of teen slang. So if you're not sure, you can go to the dictionary, find out if it's in there, and it'll tell you. And it ranks words on, you know, from harmless to, yeah, this is you need to get involved type of word because something's going on. So I really appreciate the fact that they did that. You know, it really means something for learning.
It does. But I want to skip to, I want to come back to, they have several AI things.
I'm going to group
them together for you.
We're going to work on his mime skills. You know, he didn't do the two-finger tap on the wrist. He didn't pull his ears. I didn't know.
So a lot of states are now banning cell phones. Well, not a lot, several, a couple. And Michigan is apparently considering that as well.
Michigan has, they had two bills in the House, one bill in the Senate. The one bill in the House has failed because of something that got people upset. And I don't know exactly what that was, but the bill in the Senate has passed. So that's fine. I know that they're rewriting the bill to get rid of some of the objectionable things in the House bill, because it was the bill in the House was more broad, covered more things, and I think it has more restrictions in it than the Senate bill does. The Senate bill is basically districts come up with a plan, we'll pick the best one, and that's going to be the state plan. One in the House is, I think, more specific as to penalties, whereas the Senate bill is not. And I think they're rewriting it for that reason. But there's bipartisan support for this bill in the Michigan legislature, and that's remarkable in and of itself right there. So something is coming, and the governor has already said that she's going to sign something as soon as it gets to her desk. So it's coming. We just don't know exactly what it's going to look like for sure.
Yeah, and there's 14 states that have active laws or executive orders that ban or restrict cell phone usage in schools. And I think there's a big difference between banning them and restricting them. you know, it's one thing to say you have to, like Maine says, you have to have something addressing cell phones. Doesn't say what it is, just that the school district has to have something in place. And I'm going to guess that every school has something in place on on cell phone use, and has had for a while. So, oh yeah. I have several AI kind of articles for this week, because it's one of those things that I think we need to talk about, and we need to figure out, and we need to do that kind of thing. One is from the New York Times, What AI Really Means for Learning. The subtitle is, AI is Fueling a Poverty of Imagination. Here's how we can fix it. And I know that we've talked about this before, but there's a lot of figuring out, concern, thoughtfulness, consideration around, will students let it do the thinking for them and not do the hard work of thinking? Or, you know, it's going to be around. So how do we deal with it is kind of the point I think we need to be at. And I know it gets related to, compared to the times when we went through the whole calculator thing. But I think this is slightly different, kind of a difference of degrees as well.
Yeah, I was thinking about that this morning because somebody mentioned that they were talking to, it was the same interview with a high school teacher, and somebody was trying to draw the parallel between, yeah, but, you know, when I was a kid, I was told I wasn't allowed to have calculators. And look, he says, you know, they said the calculator would ruin my math skills. And now look, he says, well, I don't know what his math skills are, so I don't know if they got ruined or not. Right?
Maybe it really did.
Yeah, it could have been, but we'll never know, right? He can say that. So, but I was thinking about it. Yeah, but you know what? You couldn't text a parent or a stranger on your calculator. You couldn't mess with, and this is one thing, is that I have the girl who, apparently she's back, who catfished another girl in the sixth grade. You can't catfish somebody with a calculator, right? There's like a whole lot of other kind of evil that can be done with a calculator besides mishitting a button and doing a transposition error or something in a math problem, right? This is next gen. So I think maybe the calculator reasoning is I get it, and maybe it's categorical, but it is not a direct parallel. I think the more I think about this, yeah,
right, yeah, I'm kind of in the same place, and I'm also really processing like what is AI going to do, because there's certain things that they're telling us it's going to do. And then there's certain things that it's actually doing. And those two things don't always line up. So, you know, that's going to be kind of fun. But it's also one of the things that this article talks about is the continuum of technologies that promise to transform education, right?
Yes.
TVs. TV was going to completely revolutionize the educational process. The typewriter, VCRs, laser discs. Do you remember laser discs?
Oh, so somebody came to me with a big laser disc player, and they said, first of all, what is this? So I told them. And second of all, they said, do you want it? And I thought, oh, this would be a great museum piece, but there's no room for me to put this anywhere. So I know I said no, but yeah. So a young teacher came to me and said, what is this?
What is this?
It was great. We had fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I had one as a teacher. And I had one laser disc, I think it was. The American Experience. And it was
cool.
It was, yeah, it had really good content, but I had one laser disc. Anyway, so they kind of compare it with the promise to transform education. And they say, but here's the thing. Most of the promotion of AI in schools boils down to, well, it's happening, and so students need to know. And there's nothing attached to learning outcomes. It's just like, it's going to be there. So they also point out there's nothing assessing its risk to privacy data or to the mental, emotional, and cognitive development of students. That's what education is supposed to do. So there's an interesting kind of back and forth with this. And it's also a podcast. There's also a podcast, I do believe. There's at least, if you go to the link that we put on the notes at middleschoolmatters.com, on the link, you can listen to, it's a 30-minute listen. So there's that. There was another article over in the Atlantic called AI is a Mass Delusion Event. 3 years Ooh. In, one of AI's enduring impact is to make people feel like they're losing it. And one of the things that this starts with is, and I don't know if you saw this or not, Sean, but there was an interview between Jim Acosta, the former CNN personality, and an AI-generated student, Joaquin Oliver, who was killed in the mass shooting in the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Yeah. So they had this interview, and the writer here says, I'm on the internet watching a former cable news anchor interview a dead teenager on Substack. And it's like, the animations are stiff, the model's speaking cadence is too fast, and in two incidents when trying to convey excitement, its pitch rises rapidly, producing a digital shriek. I feel like I'm losing my mind watching it. But here's the thing. This is not going to be the last one. This, by the way, the student, the child, was produced with the participation and approval of the parents, of the dad as well. So it's not something that was done to the family. The family participated in this as well. So it's going to be interesting that we're going to see more of that, and kind of what does that mean as well. And then there's another one over at AP News. Teens say they are turning to AI for friendship. So this is an article that you might want to talk to your students about as well, and get their take on it and figure out where they are. They mention Kaylee Chegg, a high school student in Kansas. She asked ChatGPT for guidance on back-to-school shopping, makeup colors, low-calorie choices at Smoothie King's, ideas for her Sweet 16 and her younger sister's birthday party.
Yay.
The sophomore honors student makes it a point not to have chatbots do her homework and tries to limit her interactions to mundane questions. So kids are using this as a friend.
Well, that's going to do all kinds of things to social interactions, right? So I was thinking about this, something like this week, right? I think about my nephews. I got a nephew in seventh grade and a nephew in eighth grade. So the upper end of middle school now. And I think about how my parents would rip us away from the television set and we'd go out to the Keweenaw Peninsula and spend 2 weeks with my family, grandpa, grandma, aunts, uncles, cousins, right? No TV. There was a radio. So I got to listen to stories on the radio and I took books. And Hazel apparently approves of that. I'm with Hazel. So, but at the time I thought, oh, that was like so mean. But at the end of the 2 weeks, I was like, I don't want to go back and watch TV or do anything. I'd rather keep doing what I was doing. And the withdrawal thing, I think, is a very real experience. And I think like detoxing kids from that, I think it would be a good thing. I think the social aspect of it too, right? Because my cousins and I, we bonded and we got to know each other really well. And we still talk because we spent that time. That's our shared experience, right? What are the shared experiences that our kids are going to have in school, right? So with AI, the solution at ISTE was do more project-based learning. But if we create those projects and have them do it, and struggle with it, that struggle creates those bonds. I survived Mr. McGurr's class because I built this. I built a thing. You know, I think that's how one way to support it. I don't think it's the only way, but you know, just I'm walking myself through this and figuring this out, just like everybody else is. But I'm thinking, yeah, how do we? Because you know, when they go home, it's going to be right. One of the issues that I've had the past couple of years. My eighth graders would decide not to come to school, right? Parents would say, all right, you know, walk yourself to school. I'll see you later. And then the kids were like, yep, see ya. And they would go down to the basement and they'd play games all day, right? And they wouldn't show up to school because I caught that one kid, my eighth grader, was at the grocery store. And the mom worked at the grocery store and she caught me. And I said, hey, where was so-and-so today, her son? She goes, he was at school. I said, no, he wasn't. Yeah, I caught. It was a beautiful thing. He walked in my class. His head immediately went down. He's like, yeah, okay, I got it. So I called him up and I, you know, told him, I said, hey, I'm really disappointed and I really want you here. And I tried to make him know that. And I had him for seventh grade too. So it wasn't like, you know, we didn't have a relationship already, but I mean, and then he let me know that this is when the kids aren't showing up all the time. This is what they're doing. And then last year I had a kid miss 98, 99 days. And the other kids straight up told me this is what he's doing, right? And then other kids would not show up to school. And they're, you know, it's like, what's going on? They said, oh, you remember Abbas? Well, they're in his basement or his dad has a garage that's converted and he's in the garage, you know, and not coming to school. So the kids have figured out a way. But I think if we do that, maybe we'll also cut down on some of these other things that kids are choosing to do instead of school.
And sorry, I remember the research that says that they, you know, that the kids who have gone through like 7 days screen free, they report being happier. They report that they were doing better. They report all of this. And then on day eight, they go right back to the screens. And I was talking to somebody about it and somebody was kind of walking through and they were like, yep, just like us. We know we feel better if we eat right and exercise, but, you know, so there is that. There is also, I thought this was a fascinating article called Social Media Shortens Your Life. Here's How to Get Your Time Back. This is from the FP. And they bring in the phenomenon of the 30-minute ick factor. And basically, it says that you underestimate the time that you spend such on platforms such as TikTok and Instagram and that. And that this also kind of warps your perception of time. And they talk a little bit about the perception of time. It's called chronoception, which generally an event feels longer in the moment if it heightens awareness. But that an experience can seem brief in the moment, but long in memory, and vice versa. So it's an interesting article to read. I think it's interesting for everyone to read, not just students. I think adults, teachers, parents, it's a good article to read and consider as well. All right, we have some additional resources and some additional things on AI that you can check out over at middleschoolmatters.com. And we would love to hear from you. So there's some links there you can click on. You can send us an email. Go to the podcast catcher of your choice. Give us a 5-star rating. Tell us why Sean is the world's greatest co-show host. We would greatly appreciate it. And again, we'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email. There's a link over at middleschoolmatters.com. With that, this has been Middle School Matters for Middle School Educators Who Care. All opinions expressed on this podcast are exclusively the opinions of the host and guests and not indicative of any employer.